everyone, welcome to the NRF1 podcast. We are outside the Rush Cutters again. It's just like the summer or the spring before the season started. Is that the one we last did it? I think so. Anyway, hello, my name is Michael Bailey. We might keep this a little bit short because I might break into a coughing fit and no one wants to hear that. But I am joined tonight by Stephen Rust, Richard Baxter and Kyle Cumbers to talk through the Singapore Grand Prix and also have a quick look ahead to Japan, of course, because these are back-to-back races. So, gents, good evening. Thanks for coming in. I'll start with you, Kyle. A good job on the live tweeting on the NRF1 Twitter feed. Oh, God.
Yeah. Thank you very much. No, it's good fun. Yeah, had a little bit of extra to the race for me, so yeah, it's good. Yeah, good fun.
I will be doing it more often, I think, because maybe for Japan it'll be Rich taking over. How about that, Rich? How are you feeling? Excited?
Yeah, I'm really excited. Not so much for the early start, 6 a.m. I think it is, but you know, committed, I'll do it. I'm happy to do it. It'll be fun.
And we are outside. It has rained, but it's not raining. In fact, it's quite nice, just a bit cold. There's a few shivers going on. Rich is shivering quite a lot. Steve, you're in a t-shirt.
Oh yeah, well I'm always hot, you know, so this is nice for me to cool down.
Yeah, we'll see if you're saying that in 20 minutes time. Right then, the Singapore Grand Prix. Where did that come from? I mean, I have to say, I was busy working here, there, and everywhere. So, for the way it just came about, was miraculous. Mercedes were completely off the pace compared to Ferrari, and even Red Bull. So, has everyone improved, or did Mercedes just blow up?
I think it might just be the track, possibly, because to go from, which they're probably roughly half a second quicker than most teams Ferrari during the year, to being, I think it's 1.5 seconds slower.
It was huge.
I mean, something's gone wrong, or something weird has happened with that track, or tyres, or something. There was even rumours that Pirelli might have provided, under the orders from Bernie Eccleston, they may have provided them with some dodgy tyres for the weekend.
Oh, which, I love it.
That's the sort of thing he would normally come up with.
Look, you stole my line. See, that is exactly it. I mean, Rich, what do you think of that, Rich? It's a good conspiracy theory, that one.
I didn't come up with it, so I don't think it's that good, to be honest.
Oh, I see. Oh, now we get the truth. Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I suppose that the thing to wonder is if we'll see this again in Japan and ongoing, or whether it was just Singapore and a one-off.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Mercedes said they don't know what it was, and I don't think many other people do at all. I think it was, you know, like Carl says, mainly the track. But and, of course, Vettel is a bit of an expert around Singapore. I can't remember how many times he's won there. But yeah, going on to Japan, I think it'll be back to normal, to be honest. But if it's not, then there's obviously going to be a massive investigation from the Mercedes team.
It certainly will be. It will run if it becomes a consistent problem, definitely. We will probably get stuck into Mercedes a bit properly later. But in terms of Ferrari and Sebastian Vettel, I thought it was a terrific weekend for them, and the way that Seb went about it all.
Yeah, I mean, you can't blame them. I mean, they had a good race, really, from their perspective. I mean, well, good weekend, really. And they were right on it from Friday right through, you know, to Sunday, you know, to the final flag. But I mean, compared to where they were from the last race in relation to Mercedes,
we love the trains here. That's why we come here. We love the trains.
You know, and to see Mercedes so far back, and with a team with all their resources to actually say we haven't got a clue, it would, you know, possibly a little bit concerning. But I think for them, I think it would probably just that particular type of track. I think all good cars have got a weak track in them, you know. I think that's probably definitely was one of them for it.
I mean, there's some big statistics that came out of it. It was the first non-Mercedes powered pole in the hybrid era. I mean, so that's in two years. That's a massive statistic. Yeah. And Ferrari's first dry pole in 5 years.
That's a scary stat I heard. Yeah, because it's like 5 or 6 poles in the last decade. Oh, something, I can't remember what the stat was, but it was Alonso in Bahrain, wasn't it?
I would imagine that was dry. Yeah,
because it probably was. Yeah. So, but that's just for a big team. That's pretty poor, really.
Should have pulled the fingers out.
Yeah, but yeah, they bounced back this weekend.
And what I also liked about all this, I mean, Sebastian Vettel had a fantastic weekend of it, but he seems to be the perfect teammate at the moment, because he helped slingshot Raikkonen to a good position on the grid around Monza, And this weekend he was doing all sorts of things to help his, he sort of backed up, didn't he, Ricciardo to help Raikkonen out. I mean, he's doing a pretty good job of being a very useful number teammate.
Well, this is what Ferrari do. They work as a team very well. If we look at 2008 Brazil, you had Massa and Raikkonen get away, and I think Massa was basically let into the lead and his teammates to hold him up, try and hold the rest of the pack up, keep Hamilton further down, keep him in trouble. We saw it again in 2012. Alonso and Massa kind of double teamed Webber, and Massa just slowed him down. Alonso got both of them, and went on and it's another, gained a position. That's what Ferrari do very well. They work as a team. But I think if they, because Vettel's only, I don't know how many points behind. What is it? 49 points behind now, I think, in the Drivers' Championship. I mean, if he gets much closer, I think Ferrari will say, right, we've got to back Vettel as much as we can, because they haven't had a driver's title in quite a while as well.
And we should just touch on the safety cars, because they really did define the race, I suppose, didn't they? Especially for Daniel Ricciardo, because the two moments he wanted to push, he ended up having a safety car and he couldn't do it. Especially with given that one of them came from a man walking along the track. I mean, did Daniel a few favours?
No, I think it kind of ruined his race, but I think, to be honest, he didn't really have the pace to beat Vettel. I think Vettel always had it in hand. And the closest he ever come was when Vettel was trying to back him into Raikkonen anyway. But no, it certainly didn't help his race. But I thought the first safety car that they brought out immediately following from the virtual safety car, I thought that was a bit strange, to be honest. I thought, well, it was a bit late to then decide that we're going to need a safety car rather than the virtual one.
It took a long time to make that decision.
I mean, there was a bit of debris on the track, but not as much as some years, and I sort of thought it was just a bit strange, and it's ages to clear it.
Because nothing changed. Hülkenberg crashed, and there was, I think it's three or four laps possibly of virtual safety car, and then the ring safety car. What changed? Surely they knew they couldn't clear it up with a virtual safety car. They need a safety car to get them all together and then clear it up. There's a few times it's happened this year, which I think the virtual safety car is really good, but doesn't make much sense when you have two or three laps of a virtual safety car, then go to a safety car. Just get on with it at the start.
Okay, let's have some of these. That's right, it's the NRF1 pit stops. We sort of touched on Mercedes and the fact that it'll be hopefully a short run thing for them, obviously, otherwise we will see presumably Lewis Hamilton get more twitchy and Nico Rosberg get more depressed, because he was in a mood, wasn't he?
I mean, it looked like he had something in his eye, which probably didn't help, but he was a proper grump on, and mainly, I don't know, maybe he thought that it's the one DNF for Hamilton and Mercedes was slow, so he couldn't take full advantage of it. But Hamilton was quite chirpy about it. He was like, oh, sort of stuff happens, so I was still quicker than him, I'm still pretty pleased, still got a good lead. But yeah, Rosberg was in a foul mood, really.
He was, yeah. We'll see how that one develops. Can someone answer this for me? Hamilton retired, they put new tyres on his car. Why did they do that? He said, oh yeah, but Ben Edwards sort of said, yes, by routine, just put new wheels on, new tyres on the car. Why?
I think it was just a practice pit stop, just if they needed any more practice than normal. But
that's not banned, it's not like testing, you can do that any time.
Yeah. I just couldn't understand. It's like, oh well, we need the car to look nice when we, take it wherever we're going to take it, although of course they're going to, rip it up to bits and what have you. Oh well, if anyone knows the answer, let us know on the Twitter feed at the NRF1 or on Facebook, facebook.com/NRF1podcast. I think it is. Anyway, Force India, we touched on the crash between Nico Hülkenberg and Felipe Massa, which brought out the first safety car. Nico's fault, wasn't it? They were sort of trying to say it was a racing incident and all this sort of thing, but for me, if Nico gives him room, then they're both fine, because in the end Felipe had to retire as well, didn't he?
Yeah, at the time I thought it was a racing incident. I've seen a few more angles. I can kind of see why they suggested Hülkenberg, but I'd have left it as a racing incident. And I thought it was harsh that they gave him his free drop grid penalty, whatever it's called. I'll get it in a minute. yeah, I thought it was a bit harsh. They gave it to him in the middle of the race without actually, because normally they call him up, then he sort of, so-and-so's been issued to the see the stewards, but it was in the middle of the race they'd done that, so nice. Which is a bit strange.
Well, I suppose he was just sitting and watching, was he, at that point?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that helped. McLaren, we should touch on. I want to mention Jensen going in the back of Pastor, because it did seem that Pastor just sort of slowed up, and then therefore Jensen went into the back of him, and that was pretty much it. Good old Pastor.
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, Maldonado went wide into the corner, because it was a right-left. He went wide into the right, and as he came back round to the left, he just seemed to stay on that left-hand side. And I think if Button had taken the normal racing line and ran wide, he would have got past him, but obviously he just wasn't expecting it. And in the end, yeah, just kind of went into the back of him. I think his radio call was probably the whole highlight of that move, though.
Can you recall it for us?
Something along the lines of, I should have guessed, he's mental.
Yep, standard. Yep, that does the job, doesn't it? I mean, McLaren, a DNF, wasn't it, in the end? Double DNF?
Yeah.
Although, promise in qualifying. And there is one big issue that we're going to come on to probably in a little bit with Jensen. But in terms of the car, a little bit of promise there. A little bit of promise there, Steve? A little bit?
There was a little bit, but you've got to bear in mind this is a sort of slow and medium corner track where it was always going to help them a little bit, you know, compared to probably where we're going this weekend. But yeah, a little bit, but it's still deeply embarrassing for McLaren, really, let's be honest. I mean, a team that is, well, second most successful team at Formula One, not good.
Not good. The verdict from Steve Ruston, fair play. Sauber, a nice little stat here. Felipe Nasr was his first points since Monaco, and he's not had a DNF all season. It is his rookie season, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's good work. And I suppose, given the car he's in, he's doing all right.
He's had a fairly decent season.
Given we've bigged up Marcus Ericsson in recent weeks.
Yeah, I did. Because Ericsson was getting the points, but he followed his teammate home this weekend, and I mean, they had a bit of luck riding with it, because obviously there's a few retirements, but you know, picking up points is still good.
And the other place we should probably stop off at is Toro Rosso, because now this was a bit of fun, wasn't it? All the way through, Max Verstappen had a great overtake on Romain Grosjean during the race, I thought, and then at the end he was told by his team to make way for Carlos Sainz, his teammate, so that he could have a go at overtaking Perez, although they didn't actually mention that to Max over the radio. Max's response was no. Then they asked him again, said just do it, and then he didn't answer and he didn't do it. And then what happens, his team principal comes out and says, yeah, well, that was all right, yeah, it's probably the right thing to do, to be honest. How do we see it? Bit of fun, enjoy it. Is there trouble ahead?
No, there's no trouble ahead, because the team have backtracked on their, you know, said, no, we shouldn't have done it. And, you know, they've gone against their own call in the end. But, I mean, I've written a blog about this. Hopefully it'll be up some point soon.
On the website, nrf1.uk. I will try and do it at the same time I do the podcast, Rich, if I'm not in bed.
But, yeah, it's not right, no pressure. but, you know, it's something funny, because if a driver disobeys his team, it's something that's not really taken very well usually. I mean, we saw Vettel do it before a couple of seasons back, and you know, he lost quite a lot of fans for that, and he was booed in quite a few places partly because of that. But Verstappen, it seems, it's not taken as so harsh, and yeah, I don't know if it's just
it's the Max loving, is it, maybe the Max loving, anyone?
Don't know about that, but I just thought it was pointless. I mean, yeah, it wasn't like they were sort of jostling for the lead or something, and it was a championship, you know, decider or something. It's Toro Rosso halfway, or just gone halfway through the season, you know, at the bottom half of the bottom bit of the top 10. What's the point?
I have to say, I couldn't figure out why they were doing it at the time. It was interesting that Carlos Sainz afterwards said, well, I've been asked to let Max through three times this season. I've let him through each time. And Max has been asked three times to let me through and hasn't done it once. So I guess that's probably why I keep saying no, because he can get away with it.
Yeah, and obviously Carlos Sainz Sr. is a bit more forgiving than Jos Verstappen, I should say. So as Max seemed a little bit scared of his dad. I mean, he said, if I'd done it, my dad wouldn't have been too happy with me. So, but Carlos Sainz, I think, seems one of the nicest guys in F1 at the moment. He mentioned, obviously, that he'd let him through three times, but he didn't seem too bothered.
No, he didn't. And Eddie Jordan, who tried to tell off Max Verstappen himself afterwards, I noticed. I think he made the point that you've got to sign Carlos up because of the way he's dealt with it as a team player and the maturity that he's shown, because they're both young guys. And they have got a good driver lineup there, which Toro Rosso tend to have. It's just they then tend to ship them out quite quickly. But they have got a decent pair of drivers.
Yeah, they've got some good drivers. They, you know, both young, both really talented. And I mean, you know, Sainz has gone under the radar as well, which I really like. He's one of those characters who, you know, remains quieter, but yet still, you know, does a job for the team. But I mean, you said Eddie Jordan. I mean, he's had experience. Spa 98. I mean, both of his drivers catching each other, having to speed up, and he made the call right. You know, you can't fight each other. We'll get this 1-2. We'll get the points for the team. And I think, you know, that's what a lot of it is about. You know, teamwork. Unless obviously you've got Mercedes kind of situation where you've got two drivers for the championships. So. That's obviously harder to do in that case, but
it's a funny one. Team orders. I mean, as much as I hate them, at times they are necessary. But I probably would rather just sort of them not be there, really. If I'm honest, I probably preferred it when they were actually supposed to be banned. We have to say supposed to be.
It was all part of the charade, wasn't it? Okay, it's time for our of the weekends. Let's start with the driver of the weekend, and we'll rattle through them quickly so we can get through it. Anyone want to argue with it being Sebastian Vettel?
No.
No, I hate to say it, but I thought he did have a good race.
He was very good.
Not particularly, but I think you've got to give a good shout to Ricciardo. You know, he split the Ferraris on Saturday, Sunday as well. Where Renault are with the engine, Red Bull with the car, I think. It's a good shout. Say that he had a good weekend too.
We'll come on to the team and the engine battle with Red Bull, but given they're going through a divorce, you just wondered if there's a bit of them that looked at it and thought, well, if we just patch this up, maybe it's a one-off. Max Verstappen as well. I thought he was very, you know, he's right up there. We've already talked about him, but yeah.
I think the two Toro Rosso boys, because I sort of forget that Carlos Sainz had that problem. It was behind the safety car.
He went to neutral, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, because there was a big gap. Maldonado, there was a big gap when they came over the line with Maldonado, and you just thought, oh, Maldonado's fell asleep again or something. But them two Toro Rosso boys had a good race.
How about our goat? Who let everyone, everything down? Should we just say?
The Wanderer.
The man on the track. Now, Rich, you were mentioning this guy. You've been doing a bit of research on this guy, haven't you?
I have, yes. There was a. It was a British citizen who was in Singapore, and I read on Sky Sports he was arrested for what they're calling a rash act. I don't know, I guess it includes walking on a track. I don't know exactly what else a rash act includes, but yeah. But I've decided to nickname him the tractor. So
there's him, possibly Mercedes engineers for not getting their car sorted out and the tyres working, which seems really ridiculous considering everyone else managed it. Anything else?
Well, there was with Lotus, I read, not for anything they've done on track, but they've actually given Maldonado a new contract.
Now, A, I only found this out just now, and B, why is that, Kyle, possibly?
Well, they unveiled the news at 7 o'clock our time, or 7 p.m. I should say, while everybody else was packing up, going to Japan or partying in the middle of Singapore. So it was, yeah. Burying bad news, I think the term probably is. So it's a bit like they're embarrassed to announce it. To be honest.
The only thing they could have done to bury it more was not announce it, I think, basically, just completely ignored it. But you know, good old pasta. They obviously welcome the money, I'm sure. Okay, team of the weekend. Should we say Ferrari? Yes.
Yeah, it's got to be Ferrari, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
It'll be.
Yeah. All right. Well done, Ferrari. And highlight of the weekend. I'll start this one off. May I suggest qualifying? Because the bit where Sebastian Vettel, he didn't need to finish that final lap, but he was just in the groove, the mood. He clearly just wanted to nail it, and he did just that. He blitzed everyone. I think Eddie Jordan called it a disgrace that he used up the engine and the tyres and should have been much more pragmatic, but I thought it was just brilliant to see that. Obviously, as long as we only see it once every so often rather than fully 4 years of doing it. But any other highlights? Highlights.
I thought the, as I said before, the Toro Rosso battle between them two. And also quite enjoyed Hamilton's radio messages during his problems. It sounded a bit like a helpline. It was like, you know, try... You know, driver mode, two, strap mode, this, that, whatever. And he was like, yeah, tried it. And then kept going through different ones, and yep, tried that. Doesn't work.
Do you think he was trying them? Or do you think he just had had enough? He's like, yeah, I want to go now. Possibly I want to go back to the beach.
Possibly after Marusha's or Manners overtook him. He might have had enough then, but yeah.
That was a good, tweet, I thought, over the race. You know, you've got engine problems when you're overtaken by a McLaren. I thought, yes. How far they've fallen. You wouldn't have been saying that a few years ago, would you? Any other highlights, gents?
Just the radio calls in general. I mean, obviously, we had the team orders with the Toro Rossos, but we also had Button with some classic one-liners as well. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, with what was it? What else? When they come up with some more problems. Yeah.
Okay, well, it's back-to-back races, which means a sort of a back-to-back pod in one, possibly, if we actually get around to recording this whole thing in one go. But let's just touch on the news before we get stuck into Japan. Suzuka is on the horizon, round 14, this coming weekend. It sounds like the first major bit of news that Jenson Button could possibly announce his retirement in Japan. If he doesn't, it does seem that he's going to be announcing it at some point.
Yeah, maybe you just mentioned the radio messages. It does sound like a man who's maybe had enough, not quite enjoying it as much as he used to, and maybe he can't see any improvements next year or significant improvements. Maybe it's time to go, possibly.
I think after this and last year as well, it's not been a lot of fun, yeah, for him, I should think. So be big news. We miss him.
Yeah, I mean, we always like to see a British driver on the grid.
That was a long one.
Freight train, I think. But I was saying, yeah, we always like to see a British driver on the grid as British people. But and he's, you know, a well-loved character as well, because obviously he's been around for I don't know how many years now. But yeah, a long time. And you know, I think he's got a bit more left. But I'd like to see him stay. But whether he will or not, I don't know.
Get the letter in now, I think. How about you, Steve?
Yeah, I'll be disappointed to see him go. I mean, I'd, if he doesn't want to drive at McLaren anymore, I'd rather see him try another team, even if it's a midfield team. I mean, Christ, that would be better than what McLaren's been this season. But I think he is thinking of going, because I read that he's set up his own rally team now. Yeah.
Something that sounds like more fun.
I think his father was sort of very much into, and he set up his own rally team now, and I think he's probably starting to look in different avenues. Generally, they all follow like into something else. You know, DTM's quite a common one, but I think he's probably looking ahead with McLaren and Honda, and just sort of thinking this is going to be a long, long time. And he's not in his 20s no more. He's towards the end of his career anyway. He's probably thinking about cutting his losses, I would say.
We will see. We'll see if it gets announced this weekend or later, maybe. And oh, we've now got the canoers. It's all happening here at the Rush Cutters, Norwich's finest pub, as I call it. Red Bull, then. They are not going to be allowed to have a Mercedes engine next year. They have decided not to have a Renault engine. So it seems they're going to have a Ferrari one. What could possibly go wrong? Maybe. I mean, if they don't, they're not going to be there, are they? They're just not going to be here.
They've said that they will only accept a competitive engine. Mercedes already said no, so it only really leaves Ferrari. And I read reports, and there's only rumours, that Ferrari offered them an older version of their current engine. And they said no. But, I mean, if they say no to that, what are they going to have? I mean, there's rumours of Volkswagen buying them out, or maybe coming into the team, coming into the sport as an engine supplier, but that's going to take several years to sort out. So, you know, if they're not going to accept a slightly uncompetitive, perhaps, Ferrari engine, then they're just not going to be there next year.
Yeah, there was talk on Volkswagen. I saw, you know, of a takeover. There's also interesting news in general about their road cars, being investigated in the US and now in Europe for some software glitch they had. So I mean,
it's going to cost a lot of money. That, yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, because they're talking about I can't remember how many thousand, was it 6,000 per car they've sold or something, and apparently they've set aside 6.8 billion already just in case they find. And I mean, if that goes through, then they might not go for this takeover. So I mean, there could be a bit of a glitch in that as well.
Bit of a glitch, yeah. Same. A bit like in the testing.
They sound perfect for F1, though, don't they?
Yeah.
This little mode.
Well, they just didn't calibrate the tests properly. That was where it all went wrong. It should have made that clear.
That's fine, yeah. And also, the thing that annoyed me was a Christian Horner interview with Martin Brundle, where he said that if you don't get the Ferrari engines, there's the powers that be to sort. I assume like FOM or Bernie Eccleston. I was like, well, sorry, mate, but you hadn't a deal for next year with Renault, and you're the ones who ruined that, and also ruined it so much that Renault don't want to provide any teams of engines anymore. I don't want to be an engine supplier because they've had enough of you. So you can't go saying, oh, what other people got to sort this out, when you already had an engine deal.
Yeah, it's, yeah, make your bed and lie in it.
And you look at that, when was the last time Red Bull weren't on the podium in one season? I mean, McLaren, you know, haven't really been there at all this season, and they struggled last year as well. They had, you know, a few podiums, but I mean, Red Bull as well, I mean, they're complaining about Renault, but when was the last time they actually didn't, you know, weren't up there fighting in the points?
We touch on Renault. It sounds like they are certainly still interested in buying Lotus and having it as their works team. The issue, as it seemed to come about, I heard, was over the fact that Renault coming back into the sport as a team believe they should then be in the final pot to get loads of money because they, you know, they won those championships back in whenever, and as opposed to being back at square one. So who's right? What should happen with this? Because we can't really afford for Renault to pull out completely, I would assume.
No, there was talk of Alain Prost taking over, I've heard, as like lead of this, you know, new Renault team, and his in Formula E as well. So I mean, I don't know if he owns that team or not, but would he pull out from that to get the money to fund a Formula One team? In which case, I mean, he's got a bit extra there anyway, so, you know, it'd be quite interesting.
They wanted this sort of, what do they call it, a heritage type status thing, where they sort of, something to do with money. I didn't really fully read it, to be honest, but there was sort of that, which I think is sort of negotiated with Bernie. But maybe the big sticking point is the fact that they've been lumbered now with Maldonado.
Steve, that's the way. That's the way. How do you see this panning out, Carl?
I can see Renault coming. I'm sure they'll come to some sort of conclusion from it. Because, as you say, you know, Red Bull may not get engines they're pulling out, and then what happens to the Lotus team if they don't sort something out? So I imagine they'll meet in the middle, Bernie and Renault, and I can see them. Yeah, it'll be good to see another manufacturer in it.
Definitely.
I heard Perez was rumoured today to be in line for the seat alongside Maldonado.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there was also, you know, I read Grosjean's possibly going to Haas. Yeah.
And Kyle, do you think?
I don't know.
Bless you.
There was talk of Magnussen coming in to that team as well, to Renault, I believe. As well, there was talk between him and someone else, I think it was. So it's
the other seat for at Haas is rumoured to be Gutierrez, isn't it?
With the Ferrari connection, maybe. But
there was also the talk that if Grosjean goes to Haas, and he would take over in 2017 from Raikkonen at Ferrari. So
Japan, Suzuka, we love Suzuka, I think. But this is going to be the first time we go back following Jules Bianchi's death. Of course, that all happened at Suzuka last year. I think Manor have said they'll be having a private kind of tribute to mark the occasion, and you know, it will be something that casts a shadow over the weekend, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunately it's gonna come back up. I don't know if they've made, so they couldn't make any changes to the track, because unfortunately it was the truck, wasn't it, that the problem. I'd say the best way to sort of celebrate Bianchi's life is for a good race, and that's all we can hope for, I suppose.
Well said. Who is this the most important weekend for, do we reckon?
Mercedes.
I think so.
Bounce back. I mean, to not only have a bad weekend like that, but more worrying than for them is if that happens to continue with Vettel only some 40, 50 odd points behind. You know, a championship that was a dead cert could easily turn into something that they don't get.
Do we want that to happen secretly? Who wants it to happen?
I don't. I think it would be quite interesting if it got a bit closer. Because, I mean, the last pod, it was kind of funny. We were all saying, oh, it's over.
And glad they heard us.
Yeah, that's it. And, I mean, of course, it's, you know, they start to compare Hamilton with Senna and saying, oh, you know, you're going to beat this, that and the other, and it's like as soon as that happens, something bad, you know, it goes downhill, and I suppose we'll all get over that ourselves and it's over. But as Murray Walker, famous Murray Walker, always says, anything can happen in Formula 1, and it usually does.
Hey, good old Murray. It was interesting, actually, with all the Senna records that Lewis was in line to break. I think it was Seb who broke one, didn't he? More all-time wins than Ayrton.
He's now on 42 wins, so beaten Ayrton's 41, and I think it's four or five races less or something like that. So, yeah, it's a bit of a shame he didn't really get that comparison that Hamilton got, really. But
no, it got completely missed out, completely missed out. So predictions wise, now a little confession, I haven't actually worked through these, so I thought we could work through them on the podcast, A, because then you can help me, and B, if we can't figure any of them out, then I'll go back to them later, and we'll update the table after Japan once we've made our predictions in a bit. But for Singapore, Steve, you predicted these teammates to finish ahead of their teammates. Poor Rich is shivering now. Hamilton to finish ahead of Rosberg, which he didn't because he retired. Vettel ahead of Raikkonen, correct. Bottas ahead of Massa, which was true. Grosjean ahead of Maldonado, which was not true. Ricciardo ahead of Kvyat, yep. Stevens ahead of Mary, well, yep, because he didn't start. Alonso ahead of Button, no, because I think Button retired after Fernando, so you know it's a race to the bottom, but there we go. Verstappen ahead of Sainz, oh, you lucky boy. And Ericsson ahead of Nasr, which didn't happen, did it? I don't think. And Hülkenberg ahead of Perez, which didn't happen either. So, you know, lots of things there. Probably that's gonna be 5 points. Not really, that's a joke. Start holding me to it. I said that Lotus wouldn't have any points, which was correct. I said Hamilton would start on pole and would win. No. I said Vettel would be on the podium, which he was, and Rosberg would be on the podium, which he wasn't. Hülkenberg would finish ahead of Perez, which he didn't. Force India would have two cars in the points, which they didn't, and McLaren would have a double DNF, which they did. Rich, you said McLaren would have one in the top 10. Nice try. Lotus, two cars in the points. No. Red Bull, one car in the top five. Good shout. They said that there would be a safety car, which there was, and Sauber wouldn't get any points, which was wrong because Nasr slipped in there, didn't he? Kyle, you said Hamilton pole and win. Red Bull podium. Well done. Verstappen in the top eight, which he wasn't he? Yeah, just. Force India would pick up more points than Williams. No. Close, though. Was it close?
Not really.
No. Okay. Yeah. Basically on button, fair enough. And also, Ericsson would have a Q1 exit, which was correct, I think. I'm pretty sure both Saubers went out in Q1 by my memory.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah.
Excellent. Now, we also had Johnny Parfit get in touch on Twitter. I think he made some predictions the other week, so he's been back on again this week. He said that you'll have to shout at the podcast, Johnny, but he said that Rosberg would make a pit stop on lap 12.
Ooh. Oh, that's probably not really that far off.
It's not that far off. Now, I forgot what he'd said. So when I saw that Hülkenberg went off and hit Massa and the safety car came out on lap 13, I thought, oh, he's really close there. But no, it was actually the Rosberg pit stop. So we'll figure that out. We don't know, Johnny, but I will check and double check. Or you can tweet the answer. Save me the work. He did say there'd be a safety car, which there was. He said one time's the safety car. Well, there were actually two, possibly three, because we had the safety periods, but I will give you something for that one. That Alonso would be in the points, which he wasn't, sadly. Maldonado would have contact on lap one. Don't think he did. I think he saved it for later, basically. And Hülkenberg would finish in the top six. So, indifferent, Johnny, which is a shame, because had he got half right, he was all primed for his prize of coming on the podcast. That said, Johnny, we may well get you on the podcast anyway, I'm sure. Through all that, we all did brilliantly, probably. So I will work out what that means for the tables at some point, but I hope you enjoyed those. Don't forget, you can get in your predictions for each race as long as they come to us before FP1 or the start of FP1. You can do that on Twitter, on our Facebook page. Email us, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. Right, guys. Your go. Tell us what's going to happen at Suzuka. Who wants to go first?
What's the toilet?
Steve needs the toilet, in case you didn't catch that. So I don't know if that's a special trick for, you know, prediction swatting.
He's got the answers written down, hasn't he?
He has. He knows exactly what's going to happen. Go on then, Richie, go first.
Yeah, I've got them written down this week because...
The answers.
no more predictions. Because it didn't work out previously when I forgot. So I'm going to say the car starting second on the grid will take the lead into turn one. Off the start.
This is our like Senna-Prost thing.
Exactly, yeah.
I like it.
That's yeah. my first one.
Yep, nothing like being specific. Yep.
I'm going to go for a Williams podium.
Okay. They do think they've found some low corner speed, don't they? Or low speed, whatever that is. You know what I mean?
Low speed, corner speed.
Yeah. Something like that.
So that,
they found something.
I'm going to say Rosberg to lose a place at the start.
Off the start line.
At least one?
Yeah.
Specifically one play.
At least one. Because he's not been good at his starts recently.
He hasn't.
I'm going to say being the home Grand Prix, both McLarens to finish the race.
For Honda, yeah.
Home Grand Prix for Honda, yeah. That's what it is. I'm going to say there will be a safety car as well.
Okay, yeah. Good work. Happy with those?
Yeah, delighted.
Good, man. Now, what we should say at this point, Carl, probably, your betting tips column, blog for Singapore, they all came in.
Full house, yeah, from Sunday, yep. Yeah. Grosjean in Q3. Science in the points and Vettel on the podium.
And you're now officially in profit?
I believe so, yeah. I need to confirm the figures.
How about that?
I'll confirm those. Yeah, so, yeah. Bit of good fortune at the moment, so...
Well,
might change soon, but...
Well, you say that. Don't say that, because hopefully we'll have another one, will we, ahead of...
Yep.
Well, now.
Yeah. Pile on. No, don't. Bear it responsibly. But, yeah, the problem this weekend is... I think there's a bit of rain around from the forecast from Suzuka, so which has altered my predictions in a way.
Okay.
I feel Red Bull, if it is rain, will have a strong weekend. So in qualifying, there'll be a Mercedes, Red Bull and Ferrari in top three, and the same again for the race. Two separate predictions. I think both Toro Rossos will be in the top 10 for the race, and I suppose we should go for a McLaren special. And both cars out in Q1 and one car to finish.
Okay. Do you not want to say which one?
Not which one.
Steve, success?
Yep.
Good. How about with your predictions, though? Do you want to give us some of those?
Right, I'm going to say that Mercedes is going to be back on it. I'm going to say they're going to lock out the front row in qualifying. I'm not going to say which drivers. I'm going to say it's going to be a wet race or rain at some point in the race.
So let's define this. What is that train? Whoa. That wasn't an electric train. wet or intermediate tyres during the race or the weekend?
No, just rain in the race at some point.
Well, I can't catch the drizzle, that's the only thing. So can we define it by the tyres?
No. Just rain.
Okay. Well, realistically, if it rains, someone will put on some cold, some wet or intermediate tyres, won't they? That is how we normally define it, Steve.
All right, then. Intermediate tyres. I don't think it'll be full wet.
No, that's fine. That's fine. In the race?
In the race, yeah. Okay. I'm gonna say... a Vettel podium. I'm going to say, considering we had technically three safety cars, no safety cars.
Okay.
And I'm going to go for a double race retirement for McLaren.
Oh, those poor McLarens.
It's got bad when we predict if they're going to finish races or how many are going to predict races, isn't it?
And every week. It's literally every week. Brilliant. Happy?
Yep.
Happy he's done. Right, that leaves me then, doesn't it? I haven't really checked who's got a good record or not at Suzuka, but I...
Vettel.
I was going to say, I don't think... It won't be a Mercedes win. I think that's a good enough prediction. I think that we will see Raikkonen on the podium. Let's do that one. I like that one. Let's also say that... Well, I feel like I should predict something with McLaren now as well. So I think they'll have one car in Q2 and one car in Q1 in terms of qualifying. That's where they'll finish. I think that Jensen will finish ahead of Alonso as well. Let's sling that little one because it's Japan and all that sort of gubbins. And how about Carlos Sainz will finish ahead of Max Verstappen, and he will then point in his face. That last bit is joking. But no, he might not actually point in his face. And then I will say that Nico Hülkenberg won't score any points again. Ouch. And I don't know why, because he should, but something will happen, so he won't score any points. And that is me done. And that is our predictions done. As I said, if you want to get any into us subsequently, then please do. But I think we better end this podcast now, because the race will almost be here. I think we better get on. So thanks all for listening. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. Much appreciated. Blogs, Rich's blog will be on the website. Kyle's betting tips will be on there too. Steve will write a blog at some point, I'm sure, but it'll all be on the website, nrf1.uk. I might even write a blog at one point. Holy moly. The website's got a slightly new look. It's not quite finished, but then it wasn't finished before I changed the look of it anyway, so you know, you'll be used to that. Twitter is at the nrf1, and the Facebook page, as I said earlier, is facebook.com/nrf1podcast. I think that's everything. I will be live tweeting then, hopefully from Japan, if Rich is all happy with that. He's sort of nodding. He's looking quite cool about it. He's got a very sharp shirt on today as well, so that's all good. I've got a comment on your clothing. Got to be done. And we will meet next week to talk about Japan at some point. So keep an eye out on the podcast. Thanks to Acast for hosting it, as always. And don't forget, on the Twitter and wherever, we'll link to all the future blog posts and podcasts. But for now, thanks all, thanks for listening, and we will see you very soon. Bye for now.